We also need food, oxygen, and many other things that we do not create. Since our general experience is that our needs correspond to available objects existing in the external world, that we appear to need a supreme Lord would tend to indicate that in fact there is a supreme Lord. In other words, nature endows us with a sense of need for things that actually exist and that are in fact necessary for our well-being. Similarly, we experience a need for God because we are in fact part of God and cannot live without Him. At the end of Kali Yuga, the same God will appear as the mighty Kalki Avatar and lead the population out of the wounds. Om Agyana Tumurina Siya Gyananda Mashavataya Chakshu Omnitani Natasmai Shri Gyanadeya Maha 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 Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So we're reading the sentences of Kali Yuga, and Srimad Bhagavatam 12th canto, and the main gist, of course, we're trying to understand the situation that we are in, our battle or our fight against Maya, the material energy, the department, of course, of Krishna's inferior energy. And as Krishna himself is explaining, Krishna's own words in the Bhagavad Gita is explaining that this daivi energy, this energy of this is very difficult to overcome. Daivi haya ishaduna mahi mama maya dumasraya. So Krishna's own energy, he's explaining that it is difficult to overcome. Unless one takes shelter of this, so to speak, then we can actually overcome this energy. No matter how powerful we may be materially, and no matter how powerful we may be coming spiritually, still we have to surrender to Krishna's lotus feet. So understanding the symptoms of Kali Yuga doesn't mean that we become absorbed in the symptoms of Kali Yuga. Right? It doesn't mean that we go into every single opportunity explaining how this world is just worthless and it's going to cave in on us and it's miserable and there's nothing positive and we should just want to leave immediately and just become hermits. So of course we're not trying to become so negative in our outlook. Of course this is Krishna's energy, so it is very powerful. You should be in great awe and reverence, understanding that you don't want to mess with Krishna's energy, nor do we want to separate this energy from Krishna. We don't want to be separatists, because it is meant to make us suffer, so it cannot be coming from Krishna. So there's suffering, there's illness, there's disease, that's not Krishna. You understand that everything is emanating from Krishna, everything is Krishna's plan. This is what we're supposed to train our mind to understand, that it is all ultimately coming from Krishna, and everything is happening for a reason. It is not out of luck, it is not out of chance that somehow or the other the sun is rising at a certain time every day, or somehow or the other there's oxygen in the atmosphere, or there's carbon in the atmosphere, or you know, you have chlorophyll and plants, etc. It is not by chance, it has been created by Krishna. It is just nothing but Krishna's energy. So when we analyze the symptoms of Kali Yuga, we should become more acquainted with how these symptoms are manifesting and how we should not become bothered, or how we shouldn't take shelter of these symptoms of Kali Yuga. So you might say, you know, symptoms are there, just that you have a cold, you have to go through it. You know, you'll have fever, you'll have this and that. So you just accept it and go with it. So it doesn't mean that, okay, these are the symptoms of Kali Yuga, you know, the leaders are going to be contaminated, there will be envy, there will be pride, there will be jealousy, there will be deceit, etc. So let's just accept it and not try to come above these lower modes. Krishna and the Bhagavad Gita and explaining one whole chapter dedicated to the modes of material nature, how we should try to come above these modes of material nature, how we should try and elevate ourselves from the lower modes to the higher modes. Of course, the mode of goodness is there, but we also want to transcend the mode of goodness. It is not enough just to be on the mode of goodness. It is not enough just to have dhyana. It is not enough just to be renounced. These themselves, the natural devotion, they are not listed under the items of bhakti. So it's not that we're after all these things in the mode of goodness and we stop there. But we actually need to transcend the mode of goodness and come into pure goodness, into full Krishna consciousness. And then we're able to understand and act on the order and instructions given in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other shastras that Srila Prabhupada has given, like Bhagavad Gita and Nectar of Devotion. So these symptoms of Kali Yuga, of course, they are there. They are ever increasing. And we have first-hand experience of all these symptoms. We need not get into all the details of Kali Yuga. They are not very exciting for devotees. And that is why Srila Prabhupada very much often wanted that we preach Krishna consciousness to get people out of their suffering condition. Because the one thing that the material energy makes us do is it makes us forget that we're actually suffering. It makes the suffering look like we're enjoying for a few seconds. There's some level of enjoyment. So you, in any field, whether it's gross or subtle, in any, whether you're young, whether you're old, living in the north, southern hemisphere, eastern block, southern block, western block, wherever it is that you're living, all these Adiyatrika, Adivotika, they are there with you. There's no discrimination. So we're hearing so much now about different things happening around the world, like earthquakes and tsunamis, cyclones, hurricanes, these things are going on and on.
Floods.
There's flood as well. Well, that's the invisible. That's what we get. Fires. So many things are going on. And of course, gentlemen, you know, we discuss it, we read it in the Bhagavatam, so we're not really that, you know, it's not jaw-dropping news. All is a flood. Okay. What's new in Kali Yuga? Srila Prabhupada wanted us to actually systematically study the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and Nectar of Devotion, Chaitanya Charitamrita, to understand exactly what we're dealing with. Right, when you're on a battle, when you're in war, you know, you have to understand your opposing army. And how many infantry soldiers they have, how many chariots they have, so that you can plan, you can strategically plan how you're going to defeat the other army. So you also have to strategically plan how we're going to defeat Krishna's inferior energy that has been defeating us, you know, since time immemorial, since we started identifying with the modes of material nature. So this plan, Krishna has given us ways in which we can actually help ourselves in this in this very horrible situation of being in a material body, of being in the material world. Krishna has spoken himself personally, Bhagavad Gita, to explain, yes, there's different yoga systems that you can use to extricate yourself from the material world. There's different methods, but the best one is this one. This is Bhakti Yoga, because when you're conditioned, of course you like comparing, you like choices. That's why there isn't only just one deodorant or one perfume. You know, people like choices. That's why they didn't just one airline, Tiger. I mean, people like Qantas, Jetstar. People like variety. Because there is, the reason why I like variety, there is also variety in the spiritual world. So, Krishna is giving us a variety. Okay, you have Dhyana Yoga, you have Dhyana Yoga, you have Karma Yoga, you know, there's Kama Kanda, there's so many different things, but ultimately this one is the highest, this one is the most, is the easiest to follow. Especially in this age of Kali, where you're dealing with Maya at your best. Because Maya projects and all these yoga systems, they might not know really what's going on, but Maya knows that our weakest point is our contaminated mind. So she will infiltrate through the mind, especially in the association of devotees. On an external level, we're not fighting each other, we're not punching each other. Hopefully, we're not externally trying to hurt each other. But on a subtle platform, mentally, we can be having a lot of problems. We can be having a lot of anarchists that are just tearing us apart. And so many riffraffs, so many misunderstandings, because we're just speculating. We speculate, oh, this person thinks like this, or this person said this, so it might mean this. You know, and then Maya is just like having a good time, sitting down and eating at your party, thinking, oh, they are so defeated. See how the mind is so weak. So this happens very easily in Kali Yuga because we have a very, very weak mind. Of all, you know, all the senses, the mind is included as well, and it is very weak. Then in Kali Yuga, you know, we have become very, very weak in our mind. When we speak of our intelligence, how can our intelligence function if our mind is just all over the place? So Krishna, of course, has to devise a plan how to heal an authority himself. You know, but Krishna himself, he has to get a system put in place whereby we can actually be relieved and saved, especially from the platform of the mind. What do we do with our mind? We can do things with our body, but our mind can be somewhere. So what is this full Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada was trying so much to teach us, this full Krishna consciousness that he explains over and over again in his purpose in the Bhagavad Gita? And this means, of course, not for a second to allow the lower modes or lower qualities come into our mind, because then they manifest. Right? The seeds are planted in our mind and our heart, and then we start acting out and we start committing offenses. And if you commit offenses, it is difficult to hear Hare Krishna mantra. If we're inattentive, then there's, what you speak of spiritual advancement, there cannot be any spiritual advancement because there's constant inattention. So there's inattention to our chanting of Hare Krishna, which is the Yuga Dharma, which is why there's so much emphasis on chanting Hare Krishna. It's the Yuga Dharma. We cannot avoid it. Congregational chanting, but of course, japa. This is our relationship with Krishna. Krishna is none different from his name. He is absolute. So gradually, as we hear Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's activities explained, even the activities of Kalki avatar, we become attracted to Krishna. It's not that we should skip these sections explaining Kalki avatar and how he will come on a horse and slay the demons, or we should skip the chapters explaining the different dynasties, you know, name after name after name, son after son, you know, grandson after grandson. It's not that we should skip these parts. We should actually be hearing them. But it is all linked to Krishna. And it is by that purification process that our mind becomes purified. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is explaining that he descends to this material world in his original transcendental form. Of course, he comes, you know, business first. He kills the demons. He annihilates all of them. And then he re-establishes religious principles. But even more important than that, Krishna is coming for his devotees. Right? To enact his pastimes are naturally very attractive for the spirit soul, because we are part and parcel of Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would exemplify this attraction of pastimes through his associates, that they would constantly just have festival after festival, attracting village after village after village, and just like congregationally chanting Hare Krishna. Kind of honoring prasadam together, having wonderful Vaishnava relationships, having a proper Vaishnava etiquette. This is Lord Chaitanya comes in the mood of the devotee in this fallen age to show how we're supposed to act. If we want if we want pure bhakti, if we want the highest abode, Goloka Vrindavan, we follow in the footsteps of his associates. Of course, we cannot directly just, you know, jump to Krishna or to the Chaitanya. We have to get the blessings of his devotees. Like Lord Nityananda, Swarup Damodara, different acharyas. And for us, most importantly, the exposed songs of Vrindavan. And we have, you know, other bona fide sampradayas. Srila Prabhupada specifically came to give us this knowledge in a specific way to help us understand the supremacy of Sri Vrindavanam. And as he reveals in the Nectar of Devotion, or as Srila Rupa Goswami is revealing in the Nectar of Devotion, how we gradually make this progress from being, you know, in a conditioned state, from being such neophytes, such kinesis, to actually elevating ourselves by the process of, in the beginning, by the sadhana bhakti, arriving through the Raghavendra platform, spontaneously loving Krishna and perfecting that by actually taking shelter of the residence of Vrindavan. This is how we actually make progress. And this doesn't mean that after some time we're not following the rules and regulations of hearing and chanting, worshipping the deity, serving the devotees. This is embedded in our entire existence. This is what we do in the beginning and this is what we're doing in the end. Hearing about Krishna, everything is about Krishna. We see everyone, you know, connected or directly linked to Krishna. So we should learn and try to train ourselves to understand what is the goal of reading these pastimes of the symptoms of the age of Kali. We should not be attracted to being in this material world at all. Even if it's great, you know, we have Rathayatra, we have so much nectar, going to Gorkhani, the Maipu festival, Govardhan Parikram, swimming in the Ganga, all these amazing things. Still we should not become attracted. This is the holy Dharma, of course. Still we should be striving, not only for ourselves, but to also get others to go back into our original state of being servants of Krishna in our Goloka Vrindavan. So though it may seem like it's very far off, it's very, very far away, to reach this goal of becoming a pure devotee. And sometimes for Swarup Shakti, she asked someone to do service or tries to engage someone in service. As soon as my keys start, you know, when I walk, you can hear my keys. So sometimes I see devotees, you know, like quickly backing and diving, right? Checking for me. But the most wonderful thing that Srila Prabhupada has done in creating ISKCON and the entire morning program is that we're engaged in devotional service that will help us deal with our mind. So sadhana bhakti is not, you know, we shouldn't see it as insignificant, or we shouldn't put it down and think, oh, I'm just following rules and regulations. But I'm just, you know, coming to the morning program, yeah, I'm going to go to class, I have to hear Bhagavatam every day, and, you know, I have to serve Vaishnava, I'm going to serve out the Sadam at lunchtime, there you go, down on top of your halava, and, you know, just do things mechanically, and yeah, this it's rules and regulations that I have to do it, Hare Krishna, you go for me. Right, we're not, Sadhana Bhakti is not just, oh, you kind of just do things, because it's just the basics, you have to do it. Or else you're not going to, you know, become elevated. So this Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, this is, you know, it's not that Krishna is not there at all. Krishna is there. Krishna does accept our service, although we're such neophytes. This is how merciful the Acha Vibraha form is. Yeah, Krishna is standing there. All the activities that are going on in this holy abode are for Krishna's pleasure. So this process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is a way in which that we can actually become purified. And this purification needs to happen. it is very, very vital that we actually get purified. Because unless we go through these different, unless we move these stumbling blocks, this anatomy stage is very important. Unless we go through that, we cannot actually access any prema or bhava at all unless we go through purification. And this purification has to come by properly following Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. The Nectar of Devotion, chapters 12 onwards, Srila Prabhupada is giving quote after quote from the Maitreya Lila, different verses. Lord Chaitanya is explaining the importance of actually hearing and chanting and following the instructions from the spiritual master, the bona fide spiritual master. So our hearing and chanting has to become intact. Our hearing and chanting is the basis for our spiritual life. And we should be hearing and chanting with a desire to improve or increase our attachment to Krishna. Because we're trying to become detached, or we're trying to become less attracted to material energy. And for us to succeed in that, we have to attach ourselves to something higher, to a higher place. So we have to cultivate this mood of hearing more and more about Krishna as Krishna's servant. And when you hear about Krishna, naturally you develop an attraction for Krishna. And you want to read about him. And when you read about Krishna, you want to speak about Krishna. You want to preach the glories of Krishna. Not that we just preach about the glories of Kali Yuga. Otherwise we'll just become absorbed in Kali Yuga and all its faults. And not even look at the glories of Kali Yuga in terms of Krishna coming to reestablish his principles and performing his pastimes and leaving behind the jewel of pure devotional service that we find in Srimad Bhagavatam. And the personified Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada. So in our hearing and chanting, it has to be attentive. Otherwise, Lord Chaitanya's first instruction, we can't even go past Lord Chaitanya's first instruction, Chaitanya Dhafna Marjana. If we're not hearing and chanting, how can there be any hearing process? If we're not hearing properly, if we're inattentive, if we're committing offenses, then we will not accept someone as being authority, then we will not accept anyone as being greater than us. We will not accept each other as Prabhu. We'll think we're Prabhu. We'll think we're elevated. We're not understanding that I'm a servant of Krishna. And these are all servants of Krishna. And when we practice properly, naturally, the mood of humility will come up, the Vaishnava quality. And we'll see others as being great and elevated, and we want to serve other devotees. When you serve someone, we're actually admitting that, you know, you're actually, you know, I see you as greater than you or elevated than you, therefore I want to serve you. And by serving devotees, you know, we cut down this pride, this envy. And if we don't serve devotees, we're always thinking, I'm great. I'm much better. So service to the devotees will start happening naturally as we hear and chant. We see that everyone is trying to serve Krishna in their own capacity. Therefore, I shouldn't impress my way of service on another devotee. And sometimes we want a devotee to do a service specific way, right? It's like me going to Aditya and telling Aditya you have to sit, you know, cross half lotus in Bhagavatam class. Your hands should be on your knees and your back should be straight. You should do that all the time. Or else you're not hearing Srimad Bhagavatam properly. You know, it's not like sergeants, you know, all the time you have to be like this. Of course, there's the basic standing, the understanding of how to be performing service. But also Krishna doesn't only accept the externals. Krishna also sees the effort, the sincerity, and the love and devotion that you put into your service. You should be trying to really get Krishna to notice us through our sincere endeavors. And when Krishna sees our sincere endeavor, that will come out through the association of devotees. Because if we're not practicing properly, we know that. Because devotees are very merciful and kind. They let us know. And when devotees are pleased and are happy with our service, they are also very kind and merciful by encouraging us. Not only to puff us up, of course, but to encourage us to keep going on serving Krishna in that mood. Not that I will serve Krishna my way, or through the service only, but you serve Krishna in whatever capacity Krishna wants you to serve him. And then gradually, as we get elevated, as our spiritual identity uncovers, as the contamination is removed, naturally Krishna, through the spiritual master, will fix us in a specific service. So we're not trying to jump the gun after 2 months. We want to be fixed only in this one service. Gradually Krishna allows us to remain situated in a specific service so that we remain absorbed in that service. But in the beginning, we do a bit of everything. A little bit of cleaning, making drinks, washing pots, cleaning the windows, doing the gardening, going to crossways, so many things we do. And this is all for Krishna. So we shouldn't see it as inferior. I know this is hard. I mean, I know it's hard for me sometimes, washing the pots. When I was staying in Cape Town in South Africa, Manjus and Prabhu were washing pots different days. And I just had little small pots. Humongous things. And cleaning, doing so many things. We all did that. We all did, you know, taking out the garbage, scrubbing the floor, so many things. You find a little rat lying around, you have to chuck them out. And it's all done for Krishna's pleasure. It's a service to Krishna. So we're not trying to class which type of service is better suited for Krishna. I only want to be a pujari. Right? I don't want to speak at all. Ever. I want to be a pujari and I want to be a cook. Because that is directly serving Krishna. I just want to sew outfits for Krishna. I just want to drive for Krishna. I don't want to answer the phones for Krishna. I don't want to do that at all. I don't want to clean the toilets for Krishna. So that's not important. But anything in the devotional service, if indeed we're practicing properly, we can see that everything we do is for Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, we will not class what type of service that we do. We will not make distinction in the service. Oh, this is better, this is good. This is material consciousness. When you think, oh, this is good, this is bad. I shouldn't do this service. This one is better than this. When we read properly, when we see through the eyes of Shastra, we understand that whatever we do is an offering to Krishna. And Krishna accepts it. So the only thing that's missing from the only thing that's sometimes missing in the process of devotional service is that we're not really giving our hearts to Krishna. We're not putting our heart in our service. We're making it a bit mechanical. So if we don't put our heart in our service, like when you're in a relationship and you're not putting your heart in, you're just kind of going along, yeah, okay. What's going on? No effort to know the person, no time, no conversation, nothing. It's all mechanical. Yes, do this, yoga, I will out, you go. But when you put your heart into something, the mood comes out. You put your heart into your service, Krishna can taste it. Not that you become mechanical, okay, I'm cleaning the temple and it's just the floor and then move the petals, da 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 da. You can see a few cobwebs, you know, target them there. You can see something underneath, you can remove it. You know, you can do so many things. This is when you start seeing that you know, you're making some advancement because you're not just stuck on the basics, right? You're trying to extend yourself a bit more for Krishna's pleasure. You're trying to see how can Krishna be more pleased in this service. Acting in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. Now it's very simple, we just put our heart in our service. And Krishna is in our heart, of course he knows how sincere we are, he knows our sincere efforts. So we shouldn't be swayed, we shouldn't think that Krishna is not there. Sometimes we may think, Krishna, what are you doing for me? You're the Paramatma in the heart, are you just sitting there holding your four weapons? What's going on? But Krishna is orchestrating everything in our life, every single day. Krishna is maintaining us. Some of us say, no bank accounts, no nothing. Krishna is maintaining 7 years, 10 years, 15 years, Krishna maintains you. Then how can Krishna just be sitting in the heart, not doing anything? So Krishna is even more wonderful once you get to know him. So we can allow ourselves to know Krishna by opening our ears and our hearts. So what we hear should be penetrating to the depths of our heart, not just in our mind. And that day we'll be conquered, we'll become purified. And when everything in the heart becomes purified, Krishna can come and reside there. Just like Lord Chaitanya and his associates were sitting in the Gundisha temple, purified internally, externally, so that Lord Jagannath will come back. They can pull Lord Chaitanya back into their hearts. Personally, following Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we're purifying our existence internally, externally. All the 64 items, all the limbs in the Bhakti Yoga system, Pancharatika system, they are all meant to purify us internally and externally so that Krishna can reside there. And we can be able to perceive Krishna residing. So that now Krishna is in here, but we cannot perceive him because of the contamination. So let us become absorbed in hearing Krishna's pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam, whether through his incarnations in the first canto, or Krishna annihilating his own dynasty, or Kalki Avatar, Parashuram, whoever it may be, it is Krishna's activities that will attract us, instead of being attracted by the low modes. So please forgive me. I have not chanted a single round of vibration, and I did not know that I will be sitting here trying to share with you something from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So if I confuse anyone, if I step on anyone's toes, please accept my obeisances at your feet in my menial attempt to serve all of you. Any comments or questions? Yes, I remember.
Let's look at the taking up any service and you should be serving me in there. We contaminate, sometimes we get greedy. How to avoid being treated like wanting prestige or like young folks say,
Since I know you're accepting service, how do you protect yourself from developing some desire for name, fame, prestige?
Or just some pretty.
Or some Putin mentality? That's a nice question. How do you protect yourself from allowing the Arhats to come out and acting up on them? As I always hear from senior devotees, when you read attentively and chant attentively, and reading attentively means it's good to identify what our ailments may be. It's good to identify what anathas are. Therefore, we have to read different books to understand what the type of anathas that we may have. It's good to understand that they are aparat that we may commit, what are these 10 offenses, all these different things we know. So when we're performing devotional service, and we're always, of course, taking guidance of senior devotees. So when we're living in a certain situation, we have senior devotees around us. Devotees are always aware of our activities. And when we're sincerely performing a specific service, let's say book distribution or, I don't know, addressing the deity, how do we protect ourselves from becoming proud, or if we're the number one book distributor or you want good results, yes, this is the number of people that come all the time, or these are the number of books, or else, you know. But it's an internal thing that starts happening. You want some prestige, some name and fame. So the best thing to do is to sincerely hear and chant properly. I know this sounds basic, you know, we hear it all the time, hear and chant and serve the devotees. But these, as explained in the chapters previously, these activities actually kill the mentality of the false ego. So all these things that sprout, lack of fruitive mentality, mental speculation, philosophical speculation, these can all be annihilated by proper hearing and chanting and association. If we hear and chant properly and read how Krishna's associates, who were very successful in their service and at the same time not really bothered or not becoming contaminated, we can learn from their activities how to act or how to perform service. And if we study Srila Prabhupada's life, if we study Srila Prabhupada's disciples, how they push on this mission of Krishna consciousness without becoming proud, without becoming, you know, facing the idea of opening up too many temples or having too many disciples, etc. When we study the lives of these elevated personalities, we become humble. Right? I mean, how much can we do in comparison to Srila Prabhupada, who was faced with a lot of young, enthusiastic ex-hippies into running a full-on international society? I think even all of us together combined in Australia could not do what Srila Prabhupada did with so much soberness, right, and gravity. So you study the life of Srila Prabhupada, you become humble, you understand, unlock the door. All these things are coming and going, it's Krishna's mercy. And when, if we ever get too attached, or if we ever get into a fruitive mentality, Krishna is very merciful, that he pointed out. Or we could become embarrassed by it. Because it's material contamination. Material existence is embarrassing. Very embarrassing. From the body to the mentality. Gross and external. So if you sincerely hear and chant properly and associate with elevated or exalted devotees, then this the results of the false ego, pride, anger, envy, you know, all these lower qualities will not manifest. Is that all right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes,
how do you understand this last line of the translation, which is that it comes to really crazy rules of the reaction of the individual? So is it that when he comes only he does that, or because we see even devotees go through so many ups and downs in their lives, in their material life, sometimes they don't have jobs, or some diseases they are going through, and then we see the sannyasi that happens. So is it talking about when Kalyoga comes here?
Well, specifically, this verse, well, these verses are speaking about Kalki Avatar. Now, we have to understand, by the time he comes, you know, material existence would be so pathetic. There will be very, very few, the Bhagavatam explains, there will be very, very few transcendentalists. And just in some regions today, you can't walk out like this because they are so opposed to any religion or spiritual activity. So you can imagine being in this certain stage of Kali Yuga, it will be what's the English word? It'll be very difficult to maintain yourself as a devotee amidst full swing Kali Yuga. So when Kalki avatar comes, you know, it looks like we're having, what does it say here, material reactions of material world. You know, we have to maintain ourselves somehow. And by the time he comes, the material creation or the material world will be in such a degraded state. So any activity that we're performing to maintain ourselves, it might, with my understanding, it might be very, very contaminating. So when Kalki Avatar comes, he removes that, all the material work that we've been doing to maintain ourselves, we become purified. Specifically only for the transcendentalists, but everyone else, of course, they're slaves. But for the few transcendentalists that will still be around during this period, he'll relieve them from all the years of material activity that they've been performing, just to maintain themselves. If you read, I think it's mentioned a bit in the fifth canto. I think it will be mentioned later on, and I was reading in Spiritual Warrior explaining the situation in Kali Yuga at that time, the consciousness of the people, everything will be dark, there will be no light, you know, it's just being really, really degraded. So it will be a very desperate time for any transcendentalist who will be left around to try and maintain themselves. Everything will be contaminated, really. Everything. It's going to be a difficult time. Okay, go to that Srimad Bhagavatam. Please.